Everybody, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. Kicking it off a little early tonight. Glad you could join us. 312-981-7200 is the number. So tomorrow is Record Store Day, and I'm excited about this. And what is that, you might ask? It all started about 12 years ago to celebrate the people who make up the world of the record store, which I did for so long. The staff, the customers, the artists all come together to celebrate the unique culture special, you know, that they provide to our communities here. And special vinyl and CD releases happen this weekend, so it's a big, big deal. So Dave Crane of Dave's Records in Lincoln Park will join us around 11:50 tonight. And after midnight, I'm going to share my conversations with Eugene Levy and Dan Levy, whose show just made Emmy history, sweeping every comedy category from both pop TV and Netflix. And we're talking about Schitt's Creek. And yes, I did get permission to say that word several times. We'll take a deep dive also into Eugene Levy's background with Second City, SCTV, National Lampoon's Vacation, American Pie. All those great movies. We'll talk to him about that as well. But first, we thought we'd celebrate Record Store Day, as it was recently announced that vinyl sales have now outpaced CD sales in the U.S. And yes, most people are streaming and downloading music, but when it comes to actually physically buying music, vinyl is number one. My pal Phil Minicky has been on the air for nearly 40 years, and I'm going back to WPGU. Am I right about that?
That's right. Down in Champaign.
20 years, CKG, The Loop, The Drive, and he fills in for me now and then. It's Phil Minicky, everybody. What's going on, pal?
How you doing, Dave? Thanks so much for having me in. This is going to be fun.
It is, because we've never been on air together.
I know. I'm not used to being here.
Yeah, it's true.
But that's okay.
It's okay.
It's more than okay.
It is. And plus, I get to have you in studio, which we're not doing a lot of these days. But since you work here, so to speak, I've been filling in now and then. I think this is a great opportunity to talk about all this great stuff.
But so am I going to get a parking spot soon? Or
not at all.
Damn it.
No, not at all.
Didn't think so.
Well, maybe when I get one, I'll get you one as well.
I figured I'd
You grew up in Chicago, and you heard some of the greatest radio performers in history. What were some of the childhood radio heroes that you had, like the DJs that you grew up with?
Oh, wow. Well, I've talked about this before when I was filling in for you. I had lucky enough to have Mitch Michaels on as a guest when I was filling in for you. He was one of my influences. Bob Surratt, and I'm not just saying that because he's here. Steve Dahl, obviously. Even Wally Phillips. I remember my mother listening to Wally Phillips, because everyone did.
My dad did. That's how I heard it as well.
And I remember one of the things about Wally was, it's like, how does everything end and then the song just start with the vocals? How do they do that?
Right.
And I was intrigued at that as a kid.
Yeah.
So,
That's cool.
And the list goes on and on. Landecker, too.
Yeah.
With Boogie Check.
The old Boogie Check.
Oh.
See, we're about the same age. So, I mean, it was the late 70s. So, yeah, while our parents were listening at that time to WGN, and we all morph and listen to different stations as we grow up, it was all about LS. And I almost felt like guilty sneaking and listening to Uncle Tommy and Larry in the morning,
right,
or Boogie
right.
Check. Like, I turned the radio on really low at night and listened just to the craziness. When, you know, like, we were 10, 12 years old listening to this stuff.
Yeah.
And that was the cool stuff, right?
I remember playing hockey in our garage and listening to Boogie Check. And while everyone else wanted to hear, you know, the music and everything, I'm like, wait, they're talking. I want to hear this.
Yeah, not
so,
the music.
Kind of a geeky thing.
Yeah. And then you hosted the show, Lunch with the Stones, and I do the Sinatra show on Sunday mornings. You know, you're obviously a fan of the music, but you get to learn a lot when you're focused on one artist for a great deal of time.
You really do.
Yeah.
You really do. You find the depth and just the coolness. You know, everybody knows the Biggies with Frank and with the Stones.
Yeah.
But it's that other stuff that's really, really cool. And getting to share that.
Yeah.
That's the cool part.
Yeah. How about some of the people you met? Because I'm sure at the stations that you've worked at and stuff, and going to concerts and stuff, like, who are some of the people that, you know, your heroes that you said, I can't believe I just met this guy. I've been spinning his records forever, and now I get to meet him.
A couple of biggies. David Bowie.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Here in Chicago. Is at the Rosemont Horizon at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he came in on a golf cart, and he had a cigarette. So he threw the cigarette down. He came in, and he met everybody, and he left in the golf. He drove the golf cart out. He got driven in, and then he wanted to drive it out.
Yeah.
And women, like, ran and fought each other to get the cigarette.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Another one was at the same building.
I'd like that to happen to me someday. I throw the old cigar in the street, just, look, it's Dave's cigar!
Diving.
Yeah.
Another cool one was Robert Plant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're naming some big ones here.
He was cool. He was really, really cool. Just a gentleman and really tall and just awesome.
Talkative? Like, I mean, some of these guys? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Bowie was kind of, you know, in and out type of thing. Robert was a little more cordial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I met Aerosmith quite a few times, and they were really cool. Except for one when Joe Perry was out of it.
Mm.
Out of it.
Yeah.
This was just kind of when the rehab thing was starting.
Yeah.
So
when it was becoming trendy.
He wasn't fully on board.
Gotcha.
The rest of the boys were. He really wasn't.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit before the show that I spent a different side of the music world. I spent 11, 12 years working for the industry, for the retail stores. So
right,
Sam Goody and Musicland and Coconuts, Peaches, all them here in Chicago and Minneapolis. I worked and lived in New York for a little bit. And that was a thing where you got to experience some new artists that, you know, in live in concert that you may not even heard before. But I do remember the months after I stopped working in that industry and I was going to a concert that, boy, my seats are all the way back here. Wait a minute. We're not going backstage afterwards. That's not a thing. We're not all going back. We're not all going back there anymore. It is a little bit of a lifestyle you get used to when you're in the industry, because that's everything is just going, you're going to talk to the artist after the show about their performance or whatever. And that sometimes comes to an end.
It's kind of similar to when you go the first time you go to a Skybox.
Yeah.
At a sporting event, you're like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And then the next time you're not in the Skybox, it's like, oh, man.
Somebody's there.
A little bit of a letdown.
But yeah. I would say my Aerosmith story was the record labels, Columbia, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it Columbia? Okay.
And then Geffen later on.
And then Geffen.
Columbia's the good years.
Yeah. So Columbia, there was several thousand people at a Musicland convention. And I remember it was lick, drink, suck night. So it was tequila night. And we all got T-shirts.
Clarified that, by the way.
I did. Yes. Yes. So it was, you know, you got the T-shirt, you got the Columbia logo on the back. And I had a ponytail and an earring, the whole nine yards. We both had probably had lustrous hair at some point as well. And I just have a million pictures of, like, doing shots with Steven Tyler. And it was the only night, and I don't want to admit this on the air now, see, I'm admitting this on the air, that I just don't even remember how I got back to my hotel room that night. And I remember seeing the, what was that, buddy? Okay. And I remember seeing the bill that came to Columbia, and it was like $19,000 for the bar bill that night. It was thousands of people doing shots forever and doing whatever. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh.
Nice.
It's a glamorous life. It's a little, but as you said, some people can be a little out of it. Like, if you were going to talk right now about, like, your favorite rock album of all time that is cherished, you either own it, you have it, you love playing it, what would it be?
It's funny that you just mentioned Aerosmith, and we do a Zoom call with some college friends.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Kempfer is one of them.
Yeah,
he was on this past week, and he asked me that same question. And I kind of thought about it, and it's Aerosmith, Draw the Line.
Okay.
And if you're familiar with it, it's just a black and white, it's a white cover with black drawing, and it's a caricature of the band.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Al Hirschfeld did it.
Oh, yeah. I know who he is. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Famous artist.
Yeah, famous.
And they got him to do it.
Wow.
And it was just cool. And I remember having a baseball shirt with that on it.
Oh, that's cool.
The album cover.
Wow.
And I think it might have even come with it. Yeah, I think it came with the album, maybe.
Wow.
I'm not sure. Or that's you sent cool. away for it. I think you sent away for it.
But you're talking about now even the covers of some of these albums, the artwork of these. I mean, that was kind of the joy of going into a record store, is being able to kind of just page your fingers through and checking out things just by the look of the album, not even know who the artist was, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, it was cool stuff. And if you want to jump into the conversation, we're going to talk about best albums. Maybe if you want to talk about the money that you scraped together to buy your first album, 312-981-7200. We're going to do that. After the news, we're talking to Phil Minicky about the albums that changed the music industry. We'll talk album covers and much more, all coming up next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Player on 720 WGN. Tomorrow is Record Store Day. We're talking to Phil Minicky about the albums that changed music and some of the most iconic album covers of all time. If you want to jump into the conversation, 312-981-7200. Talk a little bit about best-selling albums. Give us a little rundown here, Phil.
Dave, I got to push that button. Hi, everybody.
You've
I'm
been
new.
Doing this all
I know. I know.
That's okay.
Thanks for having me, by the
way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I want to start this with the whole thing of just like any art form, all this is subjective.
Okay. Yep. All right.
It's all subjective. It's kind of what you like and what you are drawn to.
Yeah, fair enough.
Kind of. There's no right answers. There's no wrong answers. We're just going to talk about cool stuff. Okay. The biggest selling albums of all time. Now, there's kind of question marks as far as numbers are concerned.
There's different lists out there.
A lot of different lists. Yeah. And a big thing, we talked about this earlier off air, was a lot of times there's the U.S. sales and then worldwide.
Right.
And sometimes there's no worldwide things, numbers to find.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So
okay.
Just let's go down to the top five.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Real quick. The White Album.
Yeah.
The number I see is 24 million.
Okay.
We just heard Back in Black from AC/DC. That's number four in a lot of lists at 25 million. Yep. Next, Hotel California by the Eagles at 26 million. Mm-hmm. But the worldwide number that I see is 32 million.
Okay. All right.
Now, between two and one.
Tight?
It depends what you look at. Okay. And the worldwide numbers say that Thriller is number one by Michael Jackson.
Yeah, so I've seen that flip-flop, too. Yeah,
because that's like 66 million. That's not even close. The Eagles' Greatest Hits, 71 to 75, is at 38 million, but 42 million worldwide. So
maybe the list I'm looking at all the time is probably more American stuff, but
It could be.
But
it
I remember the Eagles, even when I was working in a record store, I remember that was probably the most asked-for album back in the 80s.
And a lot of people say, well, it's a Greatest Hits album. It doesn't count. Well, how many other Greatest Hits albums are on this list?
That's true.
Just saying.
I think, Billy Joel might be in the lower part of the top 10, but other than that, not much. What surprised me in this, maybe this is the American list that I have, but Hootie and the Blowfish was like number 10. Like, how is that possible? You got Led Zeppelin, you got Pink Floyd, the Eagles, AC/DC, the Beatles, and then you got Hootie and the Blowfish.
It was a huge album, and everybody had it.
All right.
Everybody. All right. Now, a couple albums that the numbers are up there, but they're not on this list, you might think, hey, Phil, Dave, Dark Side of the Moon was on the charts for years and years and years. They had to sell a lot. They did. And the number I see is 45 million, which would put it at three or four.
Yeah.
So,
hey guys,
there's that.
This is music aficionado Vic Vaughn calling from the newsroom. Hello, Vic.
Hardly. Vic in the newsroom. I was wondering about Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. Is that one on your list as far as sales or how many albums they sold?
Yeah, Rumors was like in the top 30, I think.
Was it not 30?
Yeah, yeah. But that is the number one. That's the top Fleetwood Mac album on this like 100 chart that we found, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a favorite? Is that something you grew up with? Is that,
I just listened to it for the first time last year, and it blew
my
mind.
Really? Yeah. For the first time?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Ah, he's young.
Well, no, I'm old.
Vic has a
I'm
podcast where he's been listening to new music for the first time.
Didn't listen a lot earlier in life, and I'm trying to fix that, but Rumors was one of them. And another one I'll throw out there that I fell in love with was Born to Run album by Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that, again, is probably the number one Springsteen album. I was a big fan of Born in the USA as well, but Born to Run is probably the ultimate classic.
Yeah.
In Bruce's library, right?
It's his top seller.
What's your podcast? Tell me about it, Vic.
It's Album University Podcast, and the name kind of says it all. I'm going to school.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I thought maybe some other people out there like me who never really listened to even the great bands and albums might, because I'm taking a lot of the work out of it for them, and they're little short bite size 15-minute podcast episodes, and
nice.
It says a little bit about. But the other album that blew my mind last year, and I had never even heard of the band, and when I listened to Music from Big Pink, I was sold on them. Mm. That is an amazing album. Yeah,
good stuff. Very good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Those are some of the best selling, I guess, albums of all time. Like before we get to you've got a really cool list here of like most expensive albums ever recorded, Grammy Award winning covers, all this great stuff. What are some personal favorites? You mentioned one of them, mm-hmm. but like, what's on your list? Like, if you were going to go to a store and grab 10 albums, or your the house was on fire and you had to grab 10 records on the way out, what would they be?
Wow. Well, I was going to talk about this later, but I'll talk about it now. Yeah. Love Drive by the Scorpions.
Okay, really?
I don't know if you're familiar with that cover.
Uh-uh.
There is basically a couple sitting in a car.
Okay.
A gentleman in a gray suit and a woman she's got a blue dress on.
Okay.
And there's some bubble gum stuck to a certain part of her body, and it's stuck to the guy's hand, and it's just an innocent looking.
And by the way, it doesn't have to be best cover. Like, what is the best album? Like, really, like album that you will listen to over and over because you just love the music?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it depends on the mood.
Okay.
It really, really does. I take a walk, like a 3-mile walk. I try to do it every other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to the same thing every single time. And that's a live UFO album.
Oh, okay.
I know where I'm supposed to be in my walk at certain times. So
that's interesting.
I don't know. I'm a big Aerosmith fan, so that's up there. You can never do wrong with Led Zeppelin, I think. You know, it depends on the mood.
Yeah. Fleetwood Mac, I'd say for me, Fleetwood Mac Rumors, I'd say it was a good one. Beach Boys, Pet Sounds, I was a big fan. And more in the summer.
Yeah.
If I'm on the lake or whatever, it's all about, and the kids are like, listen to this again. Really?
This is influential stuff.
Damn it. Born to Run, Born in the USA, Sticky Fingers by the Stones.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a favorite.
We could do a whole show on what Stones album is the best.
That's true. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, hello. Yeah. Blondie, Parallel Lines.
Cool.
Great album. I like that album. U2, Unforgettable Fire. I know it's not on a lot of the lists, but it's just one of my favorite kind of easygoing albums in all this.
I like War.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And that's earlier. Way earlier.
Yeah.
81.
It was the last time, I'll never forget seeing them at the Aragon Ballroom.
Okay.
And we knew at the time that this was going to be the last time we were going to see this band at this small of a venue.
Oh, that's cool.
And
okay.
The encore, they all switched instruments.
Oh, that's neat.
They're playing different instruments, and the crowd is like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What's going on? It was really, really cool.
Elvis Costello, I'd say anything he does, I'll listen to.
Yeah.
He was in the studio. Like, I know this is the craziest thing. Like, that was like a major wish list to have him on. And I remember he had a book out some years ago, and I said, yeah, we'd love you to come in studio. He's like, all right. He did like an hour and a half with us.
Wow.
Live in studio. There was in the glass windows here, there was like an audience. It was over at the Trip Tower, but it was pretty cool. We were talking to Phil Minicky about albums that changed the industry. He's got all kinds of great lists here. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump into the conversation. And there's more with Phil next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. Tomorrow's Record Store Day, so we're talking everything music with Phil Minicky. Albums, album covers, all kinds of good stuff. 312-981-7200. So you get a list here that I've never seen or thought of before, but most expensive albums ever recorded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about digging this up.
An early one was Sgt. Pepper's, 1967.
Okay.
It was estimated at 25,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
1967.
Yeah.
That allegedly today is like 416,000 pounds.
Wow. What comes into play for that?
Just the technology at the time and what they did, the layering and things like that, which leads to the next one.
Yeah.
1975, Queen, A Night at the Opera.
Okay.
40,000 pounds. This is in 1975.
Yeah.
It was the most expensive one at that time, mainly because they did multi-track recording. They did seven different studios they used.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that's going to cost you a few.
And they used 24-track tape instead of the usual 16-track tape, which was
so what is that? Tell
new.
Me what that... So what does that mean?
Basically, you have more... There's a track for everything that you can record.
Okay.
Okay?
Every instrument, every voice, every sound.
So you have 24 different options instead of 16.
So the breadth of what you're hearing is just coming at you.
Right.
Amazing.
The depth.
Yeah, depth.
And you can just record and record and record over that stuff and hear all the vocals, all the harmonies that are on that album.
That's cool.
Yeah. Let's just go to the most expensive album ever made. It was by Michael Jackson, Invincible, $31.6 million.
So we're not talking, you know, because when I think about that, immediately I'm thinking about music videos and the production that went into that. We're just talking about the actual album.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how it got that high with him.
Yeah.
One of the reasons was it started in 97 and they finished it in 2001.
Okay.
So you got a lot of years there. And so there's a lot involved there.
$31 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Covers, a little bit talking about the covers and the experience of going through the albums. You know, obviously, people today buying music on iTunes and so forth, you're seeing stamp size images in a lot of cases of what the album cover looks like, which was really the biggest draw. You know, you're talking about a foot by a foot.
Right.
And it's and everything, you know, I'm sure there's a couple things I bought more because I thought the album cover looked cool, not because I knew anything about the music.
And you were curious.
Yeah.
It's like, what's this about? This has got to be cool because of this. By the way, the CD kind of killed that whole art form of the album because
too.
It was smaller. Yeah. And then with Napster and streaming and all that stuff, it's like all gone. And that's a shame. You mentioned earlier that album sales are increasing, which is cool.
Yeah.
Because that art form is coming
that's
back,
right.
And that's kind of important.
But the Grammys, they put out an award every year just based on the cover, which I also did not know.
And the wording of that changed over the years.
Okay.
The very first one,
yeah.
You were going to love.
Okay.
1959 is the year.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is.
You asked me to guess?
you know his music very well.
It's not Bill Hicks, no. Is it Elvis?
It's Frank Sinatra.
It's Sinatra. Hello. What am I talking about? Yes, of course, Sinatra.
1959.
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra sings for Only the Lonely.
Only the Lonely, yeah.
Are you familiar with the cover?
Oh, yeah. It's
got the diamond colors on one side, and he's dressed like a clown.
Yeah, which is...
He's got a clown nose,
and it's
black and white, but that's like the only color, and he's got a tear coming down because it's for Only the Lonely.
Yeah.
That was the very first Grammy for best recording package, as it was called back
then. You should have slipped me a post-it note on that one. I feel like an idiot now.
I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead. What else?
See, I've done a little research.
Yeah, you have. I know. You came in with a book of stuff. That's what I love about you, Phil.
I got lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Can we go late? No, I'm kidding.
Could.
Another one was, a big one was Revolver by the Beatles.
Absolutely.
Klaus Voormann did that.
I'm looking at it right here. It's an interesting... It's again like what you said. It's illustration.
It's drawing.
Pencil illustration.
But he also
black
had photos of the band that are included in there.
In various concerts and stuff, yeah.
He was kind of stuck with George because he didn't have the specifics for George. So he took it out of newspaper clippings, his eyes... And he used that and his lips for the cover.
But these black and white covers that you mentioned, the Al Hirschfeld Sticky Fingers, as I mentioned, was one of my favorite albums. I love the album cover, but I also love the album. But this is kind of a pair of jeans with a couple stamps with the logo and all that good stuff on
it. Well, it was a working zipper. It was a working metal zipper.
That's right. John's got a Stones question. He's calling from Eastern Iowa. John, how are you? You're on WGN.
I'm fine. I want to make 2 points. You ever seen the cover for Satanic Majesty's Request by the Rolling Stones?
Very psychedelic.
That has a 3D picture on the cover. It was taken in a studio in Japan. I think Michael Cooper, who possibly worked on Sgt. Pepper's, might have done that album cover.
Okay.
It came out like late in 1967. Now, that's not one of the Stones' best-selling albums. In fact, I think Richards and Jagger were both temporarily in jail when they were making it.
Again?
Again, I was going to say, yeah, right?
Yeah. The other point I want to make was that there's a company called Hypnosis that was based in London, and they used to do a lot of album covers. They did Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. They approached McCartney one time and told him that they thought a lot of his album covers were real boring, a lot of the concepts. And he said, yeah, he said, you know, I'm not the easiest person that you could tell that to. They did an album cover for a group called The Nice, which had Keith Emerson in it. And to do it, they had to go out into the Algerian desert. And they had these red blow-up balls that were kind of like beach balls, and they stuck them on the sand dunes. And they had to wait till almost sunset, and they nearly got stuck in the sand trying to leave the desert to get back to their hotel.
Very cool. Hypnosis, by the way, the number that I see, that the number of album covers they've done is like 251.
Wow.
It's a lot.
See, yeah. I didn't know there was an agency out there just doing album covers. That was a business, huh?
Based in London.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Very cool. John, thanks for the call, buddy.
They did, you mentioned UFO, and they did an album called Force It for them.
A little racy.
They worked on lots of album covers.
Yeah, more 60s and 70s?
Every classic 70s, band, 70s. And they've done them.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thanks for the call, John. Appreciate it, buddy.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. You also talk about the evolution of the art of the album cover.
Right, right. Well, there's some controversy talking about Revolver. The album before that from the Beatles was Yesterday and Today. And that, you may remember, it had babies, baby dolls.
Yeah, yeah.
Beheaded.
Yeah.
And there was like raw meat on the cover.
Yeah. That's nice.
And the record company said, no, you really can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that. They had white coats, and it was a protest thing. So they redid the cover of that.
Okay.
There are a lot of other
that
cases.
Started one way, and that, but you can see them. Can you find these albums somewhere? Like seeing what the original artwork looked like, or
you can see them, but
okay.
But having them, you know, before they were changed, maybe one of the more famous ones of that was the Blind Faith album with the naked girl on the cover.
Yep, yep.
She was 11 years old. 11 years old.
Yeah,
Seideman is the name of the guy who did it, and Bob Seideman, she was holding an airplane, which some people thought was phallic. He thought it was a different thing, very artsy, whatever. And his reasoning for going after this 11-year-old girl, he didn't know if he wanted to go younger or older, and there were reasons for doing both. So he went with the 11-year-old girl.
Probably not the best decision. But, you know, there was record albums that I remember in the record store that we had actually turn around. We were told, like, okay, you know, we're really upsetting some people coming in there. There's families coming. You got to turn it to the back.
Right, right.
That happened over time.
And you were in the era when there was the advisory.
Yes. Yeah, the parental advisory.
Parental advisory.
Yeah.
And I think more than half of the artists who had those are like, oh, we're going to sell a ton of records.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
They did.
They did.
Right?
They absolutely did. Talking to Phil Minicky, there's more on these great albums after the news. WGN, we're talking all things greatest albums of all time. Album covers, all kinds of good stuff with Phil Minicky. So we both have good stories about this album, which is just so odd that we both have an affinity for not only the cover, but the music.
Right. And, yeah. and you hear that music, it's like, oh, I know that. That's,
yeah.
That's Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
But it's the album cover that's so memorable. It's a green cover.
Yep.
I have it in my head. It's a woman with frosting all over herself doing like a double layer cake or whatever.
Mm-hmm. She, by the way, some quick facts, she was 29 years old at the time and 3 months pregnant.
Well, it was hidden pretty well behind the frosting and everything. Yeah. Someone did an article on her just a couple years ago, showed what she looked like today. She seriously looked exactly the same, just a little, well, considerably older. But, I mean, she looks exactly the same. But this album for me, Phil, was,
Whipped Cream and Other Delights.
Yes.
But the name of it, just
yeah.
for me. Yeah.
And it was one of those albums that was in my dad's collection. There was like 10, 12 albums that were always out, and then he had stuff in the closet. And I remember taking that out and playing it all the time. And I took it because he doesn't have a record player anymore. And it was on this old Zenith console. And I just bought the same console that we had as kids because I found it just going through eBay or whatever.
Stop it.
The sound is absolutely spectacular. But when my dad came over, I showed him it. I lifted it up and he said, "That's the damn album you stole from me right there. That is it. That's one of mine."
And there was a reason that you stole it. You were how old at the time?
Oh, when I listened to it for the first time, I was probably 10, 12 years old, and it was just a cool album.
Yeah.
I remember them having parties and listening to that, but so many of those songs on there are just iconic.
Right.
Herb Alpert.
During his concerts, he would play that song, and he would say, "Sorry, we can't play the album cover for you."
I bet.
One more thing about Herb.
Yeah.
I mentioned this to you before. His net worth, Herb Alpert, his net worth.
Now, he ran, owned, operated A&M Records.
Yeah.
We have to remember that.
Yeah.
He's been on my show before. He's, I would say, cool cat.
Yeah.
He's a Paul Schaefer cool cat kind of guy.
And does he still look kind of like Paul Newman? A little bit?
No,
he did back in the day.
Older, much older. But I would say so. Yeah. Back in the day, he absolutely did.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Net worth.
Herb Alpert's net worth is $850 million.
That blew my mind.
That's a lot of records.
But again, he discovered a lot of great talent out there besides doing his own thing. And I love that in his 80s, he is still doing his own thing. He's still touring. He's still performing.
That's so cool.
Couple other quick album covers. Yeah. We got a couple minutes here. Yeah.
Nevermind by Nirvana.
Absolutely.
With a naked kid on the cover.
91.
He's in a pool. 91 is the year.
Yeah.
That kid is Spencer Eldon.
Mm-hmm.
He was paid. His parents were paid $200. He was 4 months old at the time.
$200.
Yeah. He's 29 right now.
Okay.
And he uses the pickup line. He goes, "Hey, how you doing? You want to see my penis?"
No.
Again?
Oh, jeez. Oh, no.
Again?
Again. I get it. But that album cover.
Yeah.
I mean, very recognizable to a generation. For sure.
Little backstory. Kurt Cobain was talking about water births, and he wanted to do a water birth cover.
No. Okay.
The record company said, "No, I don't think that's going to work."
Mm-hmm.
No.
What about some other notable ones here?
Some gimmicks. Let's talk about some gimmicks.
Yeah.
Sticky Fingers by the Stones is one with the working zipper. It ruined the album that was next to it in your collection. It actually ruined it.
It just ripped up the back of the...
So what they did in record stores back in the day is they moved the zipper down to like the middle of it, where if it ruined it, it would be in the middle of the album instead of where the grooves were.
Okay, so fair enough.
The cover allegedly was Mick Jagger, but it was not Mick Jagger. There were rumors and whatever of who it was. Andy Warhol was involved, so there's a lot going on there. Joe D'Alessandro is the actual model for it. Some other gimmicks. The guy who did that album cover, by the way, Billy Name was his name.
Okay.
He was helped by Craig Braun.
Okay.
Craig Braun wanted to do a rapper with
Did I throw you?
No, not at all.
Okay.
With Rolling Papers.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That didn't happen, but a year later he did Big Bamboo by Cheech and Chong, where there were Rolling Papers inside.
And picture discs and all kinds of other good stuff.
Yeah.
Phil Minicky, my pal, you've been great.
We could do eight shows on this.
Yes, we could.
Dave, thank you
so much
for having
me. Let's do it again. It's my pleasure, pal.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to talk to Dave Crane of Dave's Records, because tomorrow and this whole weekend is Record Store Day. We'll do that next on 720 WGN.